It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 139 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
X-Wing 2nd Edition is just a few months old, but thanks to the recent Coruscant Invitational, we've started to see the metagame for this game develop.
Yeah, and I actually got to get out and play some games this week, so I feel like I'm a little bit more able to report in on what that meta is looking like. And right now, when we're talking about the meta, we're going to be talking about the extended format, where all of the conversion kit materials are allowed. Not really seeing too many just second edition events going on right now, but there are plenty of extended events. And while I think extended is far from solved, we are starting to see some front runners, certain ships doing repeatedly pretty well.
So in this week's episode, we wanted to focus in on one faction that's been performing very well, the Empire, and look at some of the big threats coming from that faction.
Yeah, and it's been a while since we've done a meta snapshot, so I think this will be fun.
So we're going to be focusing on the top Imperial threats that you can see right now in the extended format for X-Wing 2nd Edition, and we decided to do a more entertaining format this week. We're going to do actually a countdown of our top five favorite threats for the Empire. So whether you're a huge fan of the Empire or you're someone who's worried about what they're going to face or what they should be scared of, this will give you a good list of either what you should be playing if you like the Empire or what you should be worried about if you're trying to play against it.
Yeah, and you know, while I'm a diehard scum player, these Imperial ships, they've been pretty exciting. I think exciting enough to even get me to try some of them. All right, so let's start off with number five. Now, when we look at the Imperial faction, they have just quite a bit of threats to offer. When we talk about a threat, we're talking about powerful pilots that are really going to force the opponent to come up with an answer quickly. And when we look at the Empire, narrowing this down to just five threats was not easy at all. So there's going to be a lot right around this number five category that could compete very well.
And I think the ship we've chosen for number five is interesting, too, because the other four, I think, in our list really show off the emphasis the Empire puts on aggression, whereas this ship is actually more going the other direction there, trying to skirt around your enemy and look for weak spots and kind of just ping them a little bit at a time rather than just going all-out offense.
Right. And, you know, I don't know if this ship shows up on number five all the time, but right now I do really like the choice. Number five is Ace of Legend, Soontir Fel.
Yeah, so we've got Soontir Fel on this list. He is an Initiative 6 pilot and currently just comes in at 52 points, so pretty on the cheap end there for an ace ship in X-Wing. But he's got a lot going for him.
Right. I mean, so the biggest reason that we're including Soontir here, while he beat out all the other contenders, is I think he just very appropriately answers the meta in a very subtle way that does not strain your list on points very much. At just 52 points, you're getting an Initiative 6 repositioner, which is a very good price. And you're not really investing more points in upgrades with him, just like Predator or some other Bullseye Arc elite pilot talent, maybe Elusive. You know, really just coming in at 53 to 56 points with that talent, you're getting a very cheap threat. This is the Empire's, I think, go-to budget ace.
Yeah, I mean, a big part of what makes Soontir Fel great is that really strong repositioning ability. Not only does he have access to both boost and barrel roll, he's one of the few ships in X-Wing 2nd Edition that can readily do both in a turn, which, of course, you're not going to be getting very much offensive or defensive modification. But if you're dodging arcs, it doesn't really matter if you get that defensive modification. You can just bet on those dice over time. And if you keep sending out unanswered shots, eventually you're going to put some damage through, even without tokens.
Yeah, I mean, Soontir Fel can out-reposition any ship. Still has that ability from first edition, you know, access to both boost and barrel roll. But, you know, where he is lacking is those tokens. He's not going to be able to get two focus tokens and an evade token each turn.
But if you play your cards right and you leverage that pilot ability he's got, where you can land someone in your bullseye firing arc, you can get one focus token at the start of the turn. So even if you do get that double reposition, you can still get a little bit of modification if you angle it just perfectly. I think, though, the real strength of Sunterfelt lies in his place in the initiative spectrum. So being up there on initiative 6, we don't see a lot of ships at that initiative, really, in any faction. Each faction just has a selection of ships at that level. This is a really strong answer to all the really strong initiative 5 ships we see across all factions, Imperial included, where you're going to see ships like Luke Skywalker or Guri. These ships that are really strong, really potent, but just inherently having that initiative 6 on Sunterfell means that Sunterfell is going to be able to actively respond to those ships, dodge their firing arcs, and just start, you know, sending in a little bit of damage at a time, even if you don't get one massive big hit out of them.
Absolutely. I mean, I think Luke Skywalker and Guri are probably the best arc dodgers that both the Rebels and Scum have access to, and I think Sunterfell really appropriately addresses both of those ships. It can put pressure on those ships, you know, whittle damage through a little bit at a time while consistently dodging their arc. And just coming in at 50 some points, that means you get to have some other really big hitters in your list while still having an insurance policy against your opponent's initiative 5 ships.
And this is a classic example of putting pressure on your opponent to make them choose a target to prioritize, where Sunterfell is a long-term threat and is going to, you know, maybe not do a massive amount of damage all at once, but can get really annoying and start putting that damage through over time if just left to his own devices, where at the same time, he's only going to be making up about a quarter of his opponent's list, which means there's likely some even bigger threats that your opponent's going to be more worried about. So Sunterfell can either get ignored and send out that damage, or if your opponent really focuses in on Sunterfell, that gives you time with your other aggressive Imperial ships to get in there and do what they intend to do.
Absolutely. I think we'll leave it at that and maybe bring Sunterfell up again when we talk about the rest of this list.
So coming down to number 4, I feel like what we saw in first edition and now in second edition, the Empire seems to always have kind of a generic workhorse ship that's going to do a lot of the heavy lifting, maybe filling out the rest of a list. In first edition, we saw it was the TIE Fighter, obviously, right away, very efficient points. Then we saw TIE Defenders, even the generic ones with that X7 title, really potent there. I think in second edition, this number 4 ship has really proved its worth in just its efficiency for its points and the amount of offensive output it can do.
Absolutely. Coming in at number 4, the Scimitar Squadron Pilot. You know, for just 28 points, you get a very good missile and torpedo carrier. You know, the ship that I think this is replaced from first edition is really those Star Wings, which were a predominant force in the Empire towards the end of first edition. These feel very similar. You have an under-costed munitions carrier.
And there are a lot of standout features about the Scimitar Squadron. This TIE Bomber comes in at just a crazy low 28 points base, which means it's really cost-effective. Just even on its own, you know, with 2 attack dice, 2 defense dice, and 6 hull, that's a pretty sturdy ship for not much more cost than a TIE Fighter.
Absolutely. But, you know, when you're 28 base point ship, you know, for just the cost of a proton torpedo suddenly goes up to 4 attack dice, that becomes a very meaningful impact. You know, whereas Sunterfell was a very subtle tool for the Empire, the Scimitar Squadron pilots here, they are very straightforward. They are just looking to deal some damage before their 6 hit points run out.
And obviously a proton torpedo is a great route to go on these guys. We've seen proton torpedoes with the updated way munitions work in second edition. You've got inherently 2 charges. You do have that built-in red reload on the TIE Bomber, so even if you run out of munitions, you can build those up over time. But you've also got another good munition option in the form of barrage rockets. Thankfully, the Scimitar Squadron has 2 of those missile slots, so you have access to that barrage rockets missile upgrade card.
Right, and here's where I like barrage rockets is when you're using that bomber as, you know, just kind of a filler ship, put a little extra punch in your list, give an annoying threat for your opponent to answer. I mean, because the weakness of the Scimitar is its low initiative, just initiative 2. So it's going to be hard to set up target locks for your torpedo attacks. The barrage rockets, you get around that problem. You just take a focus, and then you can you know, roll some pretty meaningful three dice attacks, and get quite a bit of mods when your opponent lands in that bullseye arc as well.
And honestly, for me, it really does come down to that crazy efficient point value. This is definitely a ship I expect to see when we see the next points update for all the formats here. I expect this ship to go up a couple points just for how crazy efficient it is at 28. And then you throw on a proton torpedo on there for 9 more. You can fit a lot of these into a list and get a lot of those modified 4 dice attacks.
Right. I think we see the Scimitar go up 1 or 2 more points. The reason being, when we look at, you know, other factions, missile and torpedo carriers, you know, like the Seek, which is supposed to be kind of the cheapest glass cannon option for munitions, that's coming in at 29 points. You know, with the 6 hit point bomber, yeah, it's got less agility, but I think hit points mean a lot more than agility right now. This is a pretty substantial threat. You know, look at Y-Wings. You know, there are a few more points than the bomber. So just the other factions really have nothing that really compares meaningfully to the Scimitar Squadron Pilot. All right, moving along to spot number 3.
So this ship is interesting because on our list of top 5 here, this is the only real support ship that you see. It can do some offense on its own, but really the reason you're bringing it is because of the abilities it's going to lend to your other Imperial ships.
Yeah, but when you meet your opponent and you see their list, seeing this ship in there is probably the second most scary ship that the Empire can bring in my perspective. That means I know I'm in for a rough game when I see this pilot.
We are, of course, talking about Colonel Gendon, the Initiative 3 Lambda-class shuttle, currently coming in at just 46 points. And while the Lambda-class shuttle has seen some pretty substantial improvements, it's got a rear firing arc now, a slightly better dial, and a better selection of actions, this ship also comes with a fantastic pilot ability that synergizes really well with your other heavy-hitting Imperial ships.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely the pilot ability that sets this ship apart. Colonel Gendon's pilot ability reads, at the start of the activation phase, you may spend 1 charge. If you do, while friendly ships acquire locks this round, they must acquire locks beyond range 3 instead of at range 0 to 3. And Gendon comes with 2 charges, so you can use this ability twice.
And this is one of those Anthem abilities that doesn't have a specified number of ships it can affect. So you really see a lot of value here the more ships you can include that can use this ability meaningfully. Now, obviously, the go-to here would be using those Scimitar squadrons we were just talking about, fitting a bunch of those in your list with maybe some proton torpedoes, and then even on turn 1 or turn 2, using that Gendon ability to let them all get target locks on 1 or 2 different targets on your opponent's side so that you have those shots set up for when you finally engage, you can actually have a target lock and then just take a focus.
Absolutely. So the TIE Bomber is already a pretty good munition-carrying ship, but Colonel Gendon really puts them over the top. Not only are they undercosted, but now they're coming in with a very powerful level of modification, having access to both target lock and focus then from their regular action, and being able to lock, you know, high initiative ships. It really is tough for your opponent to handle.
Yeah, because having the preemptive target locks like this really benefit low initiative ships like the Scimitar Squadron, where normally when you're moving in to engage, those Scimitar Squadrons are going to be moving first. So if they don't quite have a ship in range to target lock, they're not going to be able to set up that ordnance for that turn. Well, Gendon avoids that completely by letting you preemptively get that target lock so that you're ready to go as soon as that ace ship comes in. And I don't think we can discount, though, those modifications that have been made to Lambdas from first edition into second edition. I think those really lend to this ship's effectiveness because it's not even just about that ability. That's the main reason you're taking it. But this ship can function pretty well when it needs to fight.
You know, you're getting an amazing support ability for your munition carriers. But the ship is no slouch once you do get within range 3 of the opponent. You know, it's got a 3 dice forward arc primary attack. And so it can do a lot of damage there. And then what's new about the Lambda is after those first few rounds of combat, it can still continue to do damage using that rear arc, which I just think makes the Lambda a much more meaningful contribution to the fight.
And it's not really a one-trick pony either. It can really adapt to what you need now that its action bar has a white coordinate and a red jam action. So once your ships kind of get into the scrum of things, you can start adapting to that and either coordinating actions, maybe repositioning actions to your other ships, or go a little bit more aggressive and start jamming your opponent, trying to block them and then also take away their action efficiency.
Absolutely. I mean, you're using Jenden's pilot ability for kind of your straight up plan A, but then I think that the coordinate and jam actions allow you to come up with some pretty meaningful plan Bs for your tougher opponents.
All right, we're reaching the bottom of our list here. Coming in at number two is a ship that is familiar to people who played first edition, but we've seen some pretty substantial changes to the way this ship operates.
Right. I think all the ships in this chassis were overlooked, definitely, at the start of second edition. But once you put them on the table and realize how all their new mechanics synergize and actually realize just kind of how cheap they are points-wise, it's not a surprise that this ace makes the list and quite high up. It is deceptively powerful and works really well with some of the Empire's key upgrade cards. And of course, deception is the name of the game here. A lot of cloak and dagger tactics with this ship.
Yeah, we're talking about Whisper, of course, in the TIE Phantom, an Initiative 5 ship with a base cost currently of 52 points. And we've seen some pretty major changes from first edition to second edition for how TIE Phantoms work in general. They have a different stat line. Their four attack dice have gone down to two, but they gained an extra hit point in the hull. So now they've got five hit points and just three attack dice. But we did also see a little bit of a cost reduction on that front too. So even Whisper is quite a bit less expensive in second edition than she was in first. And then we also saw a huge mechanical change to the way cloaking works.
Right, so the actual cloak mechanic is not that changed, but when we talk about it in relation to the TIE Phantoms, when they have their ship ability, the Stygium Array, which gives you the ability, after you decloak, you may perform an evade action. At the start of the end phase, you may spend one evade token to gain a cloak token.
And this is a really fun mechanic, very thematic, I think, for what they're trying to accomplish with the cloaking of a TIE Phantom. Anyone who's familiar with good old Rebel Assault 2 on the PC is probably as big a fan of the Phantom as I am. But what makes Whisper really unique is she's got this fantastic pilot ability that synergizes really well with that built-in ship ability.
Right. So Whisper's ability is, after you perform an attack that hits, gain one evade token.
And obviously, when you're choosing to recloak, that's happening at the end of the round if you had an evade token. So it gives Whisper the unique ability where she can start a round not cloaked, gain that evade token just through attacking. You might take a different token, either a reposition or a focus token, get the attack, take the evade token, and then be able to cloak at the end of the round. So you don't even have to start out cloaked or with an evade token in order to cloak by the end of the round.
Right. I mean, it goes even further. You can start out stressed, bump somebody, so you have no actions, no way to get actions, but you get to perform an attack that hits. Well, now with Whisper's ability, you can get an evade token, and you can still convert that into a cloak token. Now, you won't be able to get the free evade from decloaking until you clear your stress, but that's still quite a way to get out of some tough spots.
And I think we really have to emphasize the value, though, of Whisper at just 52 points. That's on the cheaper end there. But this is a pretty durable platform, which means you can actually invest a fair number of points into it, and it's reasonably safe.
Right. I think the Phantom is a platform that rewards you for investing points into it. I think, you know, investing in some big upgrades does dramatically boost its resiliency, which means you get to use those upgrades longer, and it can more meaningfully contribute to the board.
And this so far seems like a ship that pretty much always has that juke talent stapled to it. Of course, juke allows you, while you have an evade token, when you're attacking, you can change one of the defender's evade results into a focus result. This is inherently a strong synergy because you're often going to be having an evade token anyway, thanks to the cloak-decloak mechanic. So being able to get value out of that evade without actually having to spend that evade is a really strong synergy that's built right into the TIE Phantom.
Right. You don't often want to spend your evade. And I find a lot of times when I'm fleeing Phantoms, I'll take some damage just so I can keep my evade. One, to trigger juke, and also to make sure I can keep getting that repositioning through the cloak turn after turn. Whisper's kind of a nice advantage there with that ability. That means you can spend one evade token on defense, ideally after you've shot and gotten the juke trigger. But then get another evade token to use for cloaking the following turn. And with the Phantom, losing an attack die, it doesn't have access to old school fire control system to get target locks, its damage output didn't seem, you know, that comparable. But when you start adding Juke, it doesn't become as big a splashy damage as old Phantoms, but it does become pretty consistent damage.
And this is a ship that's proven to be a very strong platform for the Darth Vader crew card. The Darth Vader crew card, of course, grants you that one recurring force charge, which helps out Whisper on both offense and defense. But I think it really synergizes well with that Juke talent. Darth Vader, of course, pretty expensive, 14 points right now. At the start of the engagement phase, you may choose one ship in your firing arc at range 0 to 2 and then spend a force charge. If you do, that ship suffers one damage unless it chooses to remove one green token.
Right, and so here you get to put your opponent in a great dilemma of, do I get rid of my one focus token to save me from taking a damage from Vader, but then Whisper will shoot me and juke one of my evade results, meaning I'll be taking an extra damage anyways. So it's really a pretty good win-win scenario that you get to put your opponents in turn after turn. And if you don't want to put on the pressure, you can save that force token for defense as well.
And I've had to play against Vader several times now, and I can tell you that pressure is real. And sometimes that decision is pretty difficult. You know, generally you want to discard the green token if it means forcing damage on yourself, if you plan to spend that token defensively. But sometimes you have to make really hard decisions where you've set up a really strong shot, and then suddenly Darth Vader's making you throw away half of your offensive modification. You really have to decide, is that one damage going to be worth it, or do I just get rid of this focus token?
See, that's interesting, Tim. I would actually say, if you're planning on spending the focus on defense, that you should take the one damage, because you might save more with your focus token. But odds are you'll be taking more. It does depend on your agility. Absolutely. What I also like it is, yeah, just stripping away your opponent's focus on offense means your two agility on your Phantom can more meaningfully defend itself.
Yeah, I think there's a pretty good reason why Whisper's number two on our list. All right, so before we get to our number one Imperial threat right now, we wanted to give a couple honorable mentions to some other ships that almost made it into our top five list.
Yeah, and I think, you know, people are probably surprised that this guy didn't make the top five. He was there when we started, but then when we compiled the list, realized he didn't quite shake up to everybody else.
Yeah, we're of course talking about the legendary Darth Vader, an Initiative 6 TIE Advanced pilot. He's got inherently three force charges, a really strong pilot ability, and comes at a pretty steep cost of 70 points.
Right, and that's kind of it right there, is those 70 points. He was, you know, about 20 points more than the next expensive ship on this list. You know, he is a very resilient ship. An Initiative 6 ship with access to supernatural reflexes means you're not being shot at that often, and you know, when you are being shot at, you do have those three force charges. So you really always have at least some modification on defense, meaning this is one of the more defense-oriented Imperial ships. It's just where he suffers is that offense.
And I think that's really where Darth Vader kind of fell off the list for me. It's obviously a really strong defensive choice, but Darth Vader just does not hit hard enough, I think, compared to how aggressive you really need to be in second edition right now. A lot of these other Imperial ships we've been talking about have, you know, really reliable or really strong offense. And Vader, yeah, is really hard to kill, but if he's not putting out any damage, that's not going to win you games in the long run.
Right. And, you know, when you load him out with supernatural reflexes and afterburners so that you can get that, you know, superior Initiative 6 repositioning, he's coming in at 80, 90 points. And at that price point, I really want a ship that has strong defensive capabilities and strong offensive capabilities. You know, I'm okay spending that much for Boba Fett because I get the best of both worlds there. With Vader, it's really just strong defense.
So Vader didn't quite make our top five, and this next ship I think is pretty close to landing in that five or maybe even that four spot. This is a, you know, supposedly a support ship, but really feels like a pretty well-rounded ship overall.
Right. Major Vermeil is one of the premier control options for the TIE Reaper. You know, at just 49 points, you get an Initiative 4 Reaper with a pretty strong offensive focused ability that synergizes well with the control focus. You know, you can use that white jam on the Reaper or, you know, remove your opponent's tokens through other means.
And Major Vermeil does have a pretty reliable offense with 3 attack dice and a really strong offensive pilot ability where if your opponent doesn't have any green tokens, you can change one of your blank or focus results into a hit, which pairs really well with both the inherent white jam action that Major Vermeil has. So you can force your opponent to cancel their actions. And also, you can throw Vader Crew on there, which is another great token removal ability.
Or, you know, if your list just has a lot of ships with a juke, as Imperial lists are wont to do, well then, you know, eventually they run out of green tokens and Major Vermeil can also benefit from that.
But alas, we thought the value we saw in those other ships we had mentioned was a little bit higher here. So Vermeil, definitely a strong choice there, one you want to consider, but didn't quite make our top 5.
All right, now, if you've been living under a rock for the past month or so, this ship may very well surprise you, but if you've been to any X-Wing events, you've probably noticed there are multiple of these ships that everyone's been dusting off their X-Wing boxes.
We're talking about Fel's Wrath, right?
Tim, Fel's Wrath did not make it to second edition.
What? This is news to me.
The ship was about as much of a meme as Fel's Wrath was, though.
And it's way more playable than Fel's Wrath ever was. We're talking about Redline, the ship that was at the top table in both lists at the Coruscant Invitational.
Yeah, and I initially thought it was a fluke when I lost my first TIE Punisher. But then, you know, after it keeps on happening, you got to realize, well, maybe there's something to it here. And, you know, Redline is the Punisher that really stands out here. You know, not only are all the Punishers at a pretty good price point, but wow, does Redline have an amazing pilot ability. It's pretty simple, but this is some straight up very good action efficiency.
Redline's pilot ability is straightforward, but very strong. It reads, you can maintain up to 2 locks. After you perform an action, you may acquire a lock.
Yeah, and at just 44 points, initiative 5, with that ability, that's a steal. And of course, this TIE Punisher comes with all of the bomb, missile, and torpedo upgrade slots you could ever want.
But what it really comes down to, I think, is just the fact that this thing is crazy efficient. It's not very expensive, and it can get both a focus and a target lock in one round, which seems pretty simple, but that's incredibly powerful right now, since there are honestly not that many ships in X-Wing that can do that.
Gendon and TIE Bombers can set up, you know, multiple proton torpedoes and throw more red dice than a list including Redline can. But for a single ship, you know, in a vacuum, this is the best proton torpedo delivery platform. It's got a resilient body, so you know it's going to live to launch its attack, at least the first one. And at initiative 5, it's going to move in, and if you're in range, it's going to take a focus and acquire a target lock for full mods. If it's out of range, it can boost in and still use that ability to acquire a target lock. It just makes it so versatile in how it can attack you. You really have to be very careful in your approach.
And complementing that ability is just the access to the trajectory simulator, which lets you launch bombs 5 straight forward instead of sending them out the back, and combining that with some proton bombs. So you've got a dual threat there where not only can you send bombs forward, you're also going to be able to let loose a pretty strong ordnance attack, which is more than a little reminiscent of what we were seeing from Captain Nim towards the end of first edition.
Right. Whereas I think Nim was just an amazing bombing platform and a pretty good missile platform, Redline is an amazing torpedo platform and a pretty good bombing platform, but, you know, having access to multiple bombs and that trajectory simulator, you can also take ablative plating for when you launch that bomb forward and then just run right into it yourself. There's a lot of ways to upgrade Redline, and it seems like all of them are doing pretty good, whether you focus more on bombs or more on torpedoes and missiles. It's pretty versatile, but all of them focus on that offense. It is a very threatening ship that will deal out a lot more damage than it'll take through its 9 hit points.
And one thing that I think makes Redline really stand out is that Redline is an even threat across the beginning, middle, and end of a game, where you're never really going to be able to avoid that threat. Since you've got that built-in white reload action, even if Redline starts to spend all of his ordnance and bombs, if you don't focus down Redline and get rid of him, just over time in very short order, Redline's going to get enough of those munitions back so that he can suddenly become a threat again. And thanks to that built-in ability to get that focus and target lock in one turn, it really only takes one turn of setup to get another missile locked and loaded.
Absolutely. And, you know, especially when you get into the late game, you've already weathered a few of those torpedoes or bomb attacks. Each one you reload is just like, oh, another big threat I have to deal with. And as you run out of ships, the repositioning actions of the Punisher, I think, become even better, where, you know, with access to both boost and barrel roll, you know, this ship can dodge your arc and still slam you with a proton torpedo. You know, it can take that red barrel roll, but because Redline's ability just says you acquire a lock, not perform a target lock action, he can still do that even after taking that red barrel roll action.
I think Redline has really earned his spot at the top of our list here.
Absolutely. I mean, this is not a ship that you would think would be the Imperials' best to offer. When we think of Imperials, we think of lots of agility, you know, using focus and evade tokens to your best defense. Redline is offense forward. But I think because it's so aggressive, you know, ships like Whisper and Soontir Fell that want to be a little bit more resilient, they can easily hide behind the big guns of Redline. And I think when you put Redline in combination with a few of these other pieces, either our honorable mentions or, you know, 2 through 5, they become pretty powerful lists.
Well, that's our look at the top 5 Imperial threats currently in X-Wing. We took some time to figure out what our order would be and what would be in this list. Obviously, there were some close calls there with some honorable mentions, but we're interested in what you guys would choose as your top 5 picks for Imperial threats. So head on over to our Facebook page. You can find the link to this episode and go ahead and throw a comment there and let us know, what are your top 5 picks for Imperial threats?
Absolutely. And if you think there's a ship that just completely missed our list that definitely should have been on there, be sure to let us know. But if your answer is Howl Runner, you're wrong.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/radiotcx and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy listening to the show, please go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and why others would be interested in listening.
If you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/radiotcx and become a supporter of the show today. It really means a lot to us.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.